My 1 year is clogged right now. Voice is troubling, like I cannot hear myself speak, and I'm also having a little trouble hearing others speak. Thanks, this cake. Hi guys,
Hi.
welcome back to the Creepy Case Podcast. I'm your host Aditi.
Anushka.
And yeah, we are here with some creepy stories. We're so excited.
Yes.
We are finally going to end the
book.
Lengthy story that we are narrating from the last four episodes.
Three episodes? I think four.
Four episodes. It was quite a lengthy one. But
40 pages, I think.
Yeah, but it was so good, and I cannot wait to find out what's happening. So again, disclaimer, if you haven't heard, listen to the last four episodes, you are not going to be understanding the first segment of this episode.
Yeah.
So we really recommend that you go back to the last four episodes, listen to them, and then come back to this one. And yeah, and also if your podcast listening platform allows it, then do leave us a review.
Yeah.
We'd love that.
Yes.
Yeah, 5-star is what we want. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
So how was your week?
It was fine.
Yeah, it was chill.
Yeah, it was chill.
Yeah. We decided that we are going to have a mom versus daughter versus daughter cooking tournament or something.
Yeah.
So we were actually watching Eatin' with Little Mix, which is like a show, not like a show but a series, like the girl group Little Mix gig. So basically they had a cook-off, so that's what we are going to be doing. We are going to be filming the entire thing, so if you are interested, I'll leave my vlog channel's link below so you can watch that.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get started with the episode. So, what was the recap there, Rory?
I think they were coming back from
someone
came, aadmi wale came.
So the bus full of there's a bus full of passengers. The bus is stranded, and they are finally being rescued by some army officers. They are in an army truck, and they are getting back. They are going back to the location where they intend to go. So yeah, let's get going. Alright, so they are in the army truck on their way back to home, and the driver and the conductor have stopped and they have been dropped at Narkanda. Now they are moving ahead. Sitting next to the driver, Nandi knew that he was supposed to keep awake for his sake. Although his eyes were heavy with sleep, he kept the conversation alive. They talked about their families, country's affairs, and the terrible massacre following the partition in 1947 that was so fresh on their minds. In northern India, everyone's close and distant families, directly or indirectly, seem to have been affected by the horrific bloodbath. That was so horrific. Like, they totally avoided discussing anything spooky again. Hours passed quickly for Nandi. They were still engrossed in an animated exchange when the truck halted once again in complete wilderness. Nandi looked at the driver inquiringly. "Your destination, sir?" announced Narinder Singh. Nandi looked around. There was nothing in the vicinity apart from the dense coniferous forest. There was absolute zilt. There weren't even any street lights to indicate habitation. "Is this army driver playing a prank on me? He has been behaving absolutely normal, but now he wants to get me to get off in the middle of nowhere in this forest." He looked at Narinder Singh with anxiety written large on his face. Narinder Singh nodded and pointed at a path ascending uphill, dimly visible in the light of the half moon. He was also quick to grasp Nandi's nervousness. Patting his back, the driver consoled him. The building you want to reach is just a few curves ahead. I have been there with my friends, though at daytime. Beautiful place. If you walk fast, which of course you will, you should be there in less than 10 minutes. Oh my god. Why can't they just drop him exactly at the house?
Yeah. Something's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, they are going in some other direction and they have to drop many other passengers as well. But yeah, I think they should have dropped him exactly at the house. Yeah. Nandi had no choice but to trust the helpful man. He picked up his bag and hopped down. The other travelers at the back of the truck were blissfully sleeping. He heard their soft snores. Not wanting to disturb them, he extended his heartfelt thanks to Narinder Singh and Ashok. After the quick he watched the truck move further and further away from him. He stood watching with dismay, the truck lights becoming dim and then totally disappearing down the road around a curve. Once the truck was gone, Nandi was engulfed by the dark, lonely night. He peered at his watch. He couldn't read the time. There wasn't enough light. Even with the light, I sometimes struggle to read the time. So he had kept his torch in the bag and didn't want to waste time opening it. Nandi is a lazy man. It's a matter of your safety. Why don't you? I mean, I cannot with this guy. He guessed it was around 2, the time he had estimated. By now, his eyes had adjusted to the dim light, which was enough for walking up the path. He surveyed the deserted surroundings with unease. The path going up was metalled broad enough for a small vehicle like a jeep to ply. This should be the place. His brother had mentioned it being lonely. Sighing deeply, he reminded himself that he was wasting time standing here and brooding. What needs to be done must be done. With long strides, he approached the path. A few monkeys, abruptly disturbed out of their sleep, rushed up the branches, chattering noisily. They were clearly making an attempt to increase their distance from the ground. More abrupt, flickering movements on a tree followed, high above, almost at the top. A flying squirrel screeched and took a sudden agitated flight, gliding down far into the dark valley. A flying squirrel? Do squirrels fly?
Jumping to a squirrel?
We need to look into that. An owl hooted from inside a cluster of trees. Owl's voice is the worst. It is so creepy. It is so creepy. Oh my gosh. And they screech. I don't want to talk about that. Then the intense silence returned. Though all the disturbances had made Nandi jumpy, the silence made him more nervous. He looked up at the tall deodar trees and smiled at his foolishness. The forest creatures were not used to having human company at this odd hour of the night. He gradually brought his vision back to the path he was to tread. And then his heartbeat suddenly stopped. He stood rooted to the ground, frozen, paralyzed. A strange woman stood on the side of the path, staring at him. Faint moonlight fell on her face, giving it a strange glow. Like light passing through a transparent film. She looked stunning, almost out of this world. Nandi swallowed hard and gathered his wits. Who's she? What's she doing here in the dead of the night? Who's she waiting for? Is she crazy? He tried his best to keep out the frightful question lingering at the back of his mind. He dismissed his fear by deciding that she was a local woman of the area. He looked around once again to locate some houses or hutments, but failed. He had an added and strong reason now to hurry to his destination. In long strides, he passed by her. The moment he did that, he felt an icy cold draught hit his body like the cold breath of a grave. The long night had slowed down his reaction and he passed by her without any further thought. He began to climb the path. I've ignored her completely. Good enough reason that she should return home. After about 10 steps, he glanced back to check on her out of curiosity. His curiosity will kill him someday.
Yep.
She was no longer standing at the side of the path. She was right behind, just a few steps away, following him. He hadn't even heard her footsteps. Of course, he couldn't. She's a ghost. Anyways, a sudden Greg turned his feet heavy as if they were tied with iron chains. Terror gripped his heart. To overcome his fear, he tried rationalizing. She was perhaps seeking company. Perhaps she was coming back from an errand and had missed her bus. She was lonely and scared. Then his numbed senses began to awaken. From an errand at 2 o'clock at night? Was it normal for a woman to be out at this time, at the time when the bravest of males would be scared stiff to venture out in a lonely, deserted jungle like this? His heart began to pound against his chest. First of all, the thought that women are not strong enough like men is not cool. Anyways, we are not going to go down the feminist path on this one. But yeah, there was still no sign of any human dwelling. Obviously, there's not. Just rush home, run and run away. They were surrounded by nothing but a silent, foreboding forest. Her presence didn't make sense. Nandi felt goosebumps on his arms. He needed to confirm if she was a human. He turned slightly to glance at her. Her loose hair blew as if in a gust. She was wearing a loose and long pale colored shirt. It fluttered, but there wasn't enough breeze. What's the point? The ghosts have the wig of their own. Loose hair and loose dress. Narinder Singh had mentioned exactly such an apparition. Oh my god. That story was really scary. If you remember the last episode, guys. Ooh, that woman. Nandi felt suffocated. He gasped to breathe. Was she the same ghost? Oh my god, oh my god. Had she travelled with him in the truck? He was frantic with terror. He turned to glance at her again. His glance lingered as if pulled by a magnet. In that dim moonlight, she looked exquisite, and her vision seemed directly rested on him. Why was she following him and smiling? Her nearness sent his legs trembling and heartbeat soaring. Her vision through what appeared to dark circles in the dim light pierced through him, as if she could read his mind. feed on his fear. He grew in a quick breath and quickly turned to look ahead. What kind of entity was she? Was she really a ghost? Nandi quivered at the thought. He shook his head. He was being silly, irrational, weak. She shouldn't have allowed those superstitious people to influence him. Perhaps she was really a local woman and was thankful for his company. She might have been lost in these deserted, lonely environments. Should he ask her? Did he have the guts to speak to her?
Sure.
Tesseract's tale now raided his mind. The spirit of a dead virgin seeking his mate. He couldn't help turning again. She was smiling seductively at him. He mustn't look into her eyes. Tesseract said that his son had made that mistake, had looked directly into the eyes of the ghost. He quickly turned his face and increased his pace on his shaky legs. He began to count steps and then the curves he had executed. After 5 curves, at that fast pace, he was gasping. Thousands of needles pricked his dry throat. He looked over his shoulder. She was still there, maintaining the same distance, matching his pace. He had taken such long strides. How was she managing that? No building was in sight yet. His agitation was making his head spin. He felt faint. Om, om, om. Was he on the right track? What if he had taken a wrong road?
No.
What if Narinder Singh was mistaken? What if this path led deeper into a forest? How long would she follow him? What did she want from him? The road seemed endless. The breeze became stronger. The trees began to sway, so did the shadows casting by them. They looked chilling, as if the whole area was getting filled with wandering, moving spirits. They were slowly surrounding him, gagging him, trying to engulf him. He was a gag man. Would he be able to escape alive? Such intense fear was new to Nandi. He began to run as fast as he possibly could on his shivering legs. He could hear the wheeze of his heavy panting. If it were a woman, she wouldn't be able to run like him uphill, he was sure. Again with this. Oh, I'm so angry right now. I hate Nandi. I don't know. He was gasping. He had probably left her far behind. The thought gave him the courage to turn, to look back again, to confirm and to stop for a brief rest. She was right behind him, calm and relaxed. She too paused and stood waiting. She appeared least affected by the uphill run. There was no indication of her being breathless. Is she breathing at all? Spasms of shivers arose in his body. What is she? A body? A shape taken by a field of past energy? A shadow of what she once was? What does she want? Why is she following me? Please God, save me. He turned and ran once again, wildly, continuously chanting Om in his head. The humble pathway, passing through a serene forest, had become wickedly treacherous. It was calculatingly leading him to his wreck, he believed. He was at the peak of his desperation, executing curve after curve. Each curve leading him to another. His destination seemed far, the road never ending. He was also frantic to shake her off.
No matter how fast he ran, she effortlessly managed to maintain the same distance, as if she was being driven by some supernatural energy. What was she going to do? How would she harm him? Nandi was fraught with anxiety. Did this frail looking thing have the power to exercise control over him? He was now sounding like an engine. Sweat was pouring down his forehead and seeping into his eyes, burning them. He didn't bother to take out his handkerchief from his pocket. So lazy. He was focused on how to shake off this unearthly shadow and remain alive. It was getting so harrowing. He began to prepare mentally for any eventuality. For whatever was in store for him this night. He was losing hope of ever reaching his brother's house. Narinder Singh had dropped him at the wrong place, he was sure. He had told him that the house was just a few curves ahead, a few minutes away, and here he was treading curve after curve with no sign of the building or a house anywhere. Should he turn and head back towards the road? But this creepy woman was behind him, obstructing the path. Moreover, what would he do on a lonely road with no chance of getting a lift? He was ensnared, lost, at the mercy of this eerie woman.
Oh no.
Around the next turn, a large building suddenly loomed above him.
Oh.
Its appearance sent a wave of shock and relief at the same time and made him stop in his tracks. He stood huffing and puffing. His chest was paining, his lungs almost bursting. The structure was much bigger than his expectations. It looked like a small castle from a fairy tale. A weak light bulb hit the veranda. Otherwise, the place was completely dark, deserted, and encased in dim moonlight. The sight of the man-made structure was enough consolation. It was, in all probability, his deliverance. He had run really fast on the last leg. Could he still keep up with his pace? He looked back and was relieved to see no one was around.
Hush!
He heaved a sigh of relief. Being alone was so blissful. The solitude and darkness of the night were not as frightening. He scrutinized the building carefully. It was quite a big structure. He reached the steps leading to the veranda and climbed up a few. Then he hesitated. This was probably the institute. Where was the resident of the principal? He conducted a quick survey of the surroundings and spotted a cottage.
Hush.
About 40 to 50 meters to his right. A narrow footpath curving and a small greasy hillock led to the cottage. Nandi retraced his steps and following the path. He was exceptionally alert, his eyes scrutinizing his surroundings, ready for any danger in advance. The woman seemed to have disappeared, gone. What a big relief. At last, he had shaken her off. After all, she was human and lived here somewhere and had gone to her house.
So human.
Yeah. He had been pointlessly unnerved. He shook his head at his stupidity. He could have asked her where she lived. Oh, no. Come on. His shaky legs were slowly becoming steady. In 2 minutes, he reached the step leading to the veranda of the cottage. He covered all the steps in one giant leap. A few more quick steps to cover the veranda and he reached the door. He dumped his bag on the floor and knocked the door. Nobody answered. Probably all were fast asleep. He banged louder using both his fists. It remained absolutely quiet inside the cottage. Fear began to creep inside Nandi once again. There was something seriously wrong. It was then he saw an unusually big lock hanging on the door.
Oh no.
He looked at the lock in dismay. Why didn't anyone live here? He picked up his bag, turned to go back to the main building and then froze.
No, no.
She stood right behind him.
No, 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 no.
Below the steps.
Again?
Yeah. Not a leaf stirred, but her hair blew in gusts. Her hair! Her piercing dark gaze was fixedly focused on him, an enticing smile playing on her lips. He stood paralyzed, his mouth agape, his heart racing once again. Were those eyes or just holes emitting terrifying energy?
Mm.
Though it was at the back of his mind, the reality hit him now. She was no human, she was a wandering ghost. But why was she after him? He felt a tight, painful knot in his stomach, and then he felt the stab, a hard jab on his chest.
Huh?
What was she doing to him? Oh God! His first loud words appeared to hit the woman like some weapon, and she staggered. An angry expression replaced her scornful smile.
Hey, Bhagwan.
her features became the beauty instantly lost to malice.
Oh no no no.
It was the weirdest, scariest vision. Nandi was shivering wildly. Gathering the last bit of his strength and holding his painful chest, he dashed towards the other side of the veranda. Hopped down, hit an uneven ground, lost his balance. Straightened and then in a frantic long steps, ran towards the main building without a glance behind to know if she was still tailing him.
Oh no.
Oh no. To his reprieve, he could now see more light.
Okay.
Someone was standing at the top of the stairs with a lantern in hand.
Oh.
Peering down at his desperately running figure, before breathlessly Nandi could utter a word, the man shouted, "Who are you? Stop, don't move further."
Oh.
Whew. Nandi obeyed him. The man couldn't be displeased. He didn't want to be left alone with this eerie woman. He stood still at attention, his body shuddering in spasms. Who are you? Why were you banging at the door and creating a ruckus at this hour? I'm the principal's brother. I got late. The bus I was traveling by broke down. Nandi's throat was dry, his voice shaky. He was finding it difficult to speak.
Aww,
aww. He swallowed hard, hard, and who are you? I am the night watchman, Charku, sorry. The voice was stern and gruff. Then softening his tone, he asked, are you Narendra Sahib? My Sahib was expecting you much earlier. He was worried. Ah, at last. Nandi tried to smile but failed, still shaken after his brush with the ghost. My bus broke down. I got a lift in an army truck and reached with a great difficulty. Jarku raised his lamp to peer his face closely. Sahib's brother? Then why was he so nervous and sweating? Nandi could perceive a friendly face, which then suddenly turned grave. I am speaking the truth, but Jarku was not looking at him. His eyes were fixed on something behind him. Nandi instinctively turned to look back. The white specter was moving. No, floating back slowly away from them towards the cottage. He looked back at Jarku and noticed the large wooden stick in his hand ready for use. The sight of the simple weapon was of much consolation to Nandi, as was the reassuring presence of the night watchman. He took a few steps towards Charku to be closer to a human. There's someone with you. Charku sounded amazed. Don't look at her.
Forgive Charku, is a ghost too.
Her? But Sahib, aren't you married?
Huh?
But Sahib said, aren't you married? Huh? But Sahib said, you aren't married? Yeah. He was evidently outraged. No, not a human. Ghost. Jakru's eyes. Oh my god, this name. Jarku's eyes explained in fear. He raised his lantern high. She's gone, he whispered. After a stretched silence, broken only by sounds of their breathing, Charku lowered his lantern and loudly blew out his breath. Who else could be out in the middle of the night? He then brought his lantern in level with Nandi's face, intently scrutinizing him. Suspiciously, nervously.
Jarku just crossed Nandi.
Yeah. I don't know, but she followed me right from down. From the entrance gate. Hare Ram, Jai Hanuman. Jarku chanted loudly. Let me in, I am scared and tired. There was desperation in Nandi's voice. Jarku had begun to appear uncertain. Why? What has he done?
Jarku?
Yeah. You wait here. I will contact Sahib and get his permission. Oh.
Oh my god.
I cannot. Yeah, yeah.
It's nice to know that the night watchman is suspicious. Yeah. I mean, if there were to be
He's just doing his job.
Yeah,
I cannot allow just anybody into the residence, not at this hour. Nandi protested, I am his brother, he is expecting me. Not this late.
Jarku
stated firmly and turned to go. Nandi frantically followed him to the door, which Jarku blocked. Leave the lantern with me. I don't like the darkness and your lathi too, please. Nandi pleaded. Jarku considered for a moment, hesitated, then finally handed Nandi the lantern. Finally, he kept his weapon with him. He wasn't sure he could trust any outsider now. Not after what he had seen. The ghost. She definitely looked more like a ghost than a living being. He then quickly took out a bunch of keys from his pocket, unlocked the door and disappeared inside the building. Closing the door behind him, Nandi heard the click of the door being locked from inside. While Jharku was away to inform the boss of the arrival of a stranger, claiming to be his brother, Nandi was about to have a nervous breakdown. Why was the ghost after him? What did she want? Please God, save me now, for once. Keep this horrible entity away.
He wanted an encounter with a ghost.
He got one.
To be fair, he didn't want the encounter alone.
Yeah. He raised the kerosene lantern towards where the ghost was last seen. Keeping the hot burning fire would keep her away. But he refused to even glance in that direction. He waited on his trembling legs, facing the door and reciting Hanuman Chalisa in his shivering voice. Ghosts and jinns dare not come here when you recite the name of God Hanuman.
Yes.
Yep. Why was the night watchman taking hours to return, or would he return? Ooh. Why didn't the ghost woman bother this man? He stayed out throughout the night, didn't he? Or was he a ghost too? What if it's a ghost's castle? Would he be allowed to live? Or was he already a dead man, a ghost?
Oh my God, imagination.
Yes. The door suddenly opened wide to the smiling countenance of his brother. Jharku retrieved the lantern from Nandi's hands as he fell into the brother's open arm with a cry of relief. His brother chided him. At last, Nandi, didn't I tell you to board an early bus? But you just wouldn't. His brother stopped midway. What's wrong with Nandi? Why was he trembling and sobbing like a child? Jharku stood guard behind him with his kerosene lantern and his lathi ready for defense. He was peering into the dark void of the night, mumbling prayers. But he was unsure if any of those things would work on the ghostly entity he had just seen. That's the end.
Oh, thank God. Nothing bad happened. What a story, man.
Yeah.
What a story.
I liked it. I loved it. It was funny too.
Yeah, it was so entertaining.
Yeah.
And we are glad that Nandi is safe.
Even though we don't really like him. But
obviously, like, the main takeaways from the story: do not travel late at night.
Yeah.
And listen to the elders sometimes, because they can be right.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, this was filled with ghost women.
Yeah.
The three ghosts that were seen were women.
Wow.
So, a theme.
Yeah.
Definitely. The
all were white.
Yeah, they were all white. They were all very
scary.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Woo! Oof. So this week, another story that I have for you guys is called Venka.
Venka.
Yeah, it is pretty creepy and unknown, guys. In the early 70s, my aunt Sarah, I feel like Sarah is such a common name, studying education at a college in a very conservative small town. Sarah lived on campus while her boyfriend Jack, who eventually became my uncle, lived in a crappy house in a crappy part of town off campus. There goes the cooking pressure cooker whistle. Because the college was in an industrial town, they were surrounded by really big feedlots and beef packing plants, slaughterhouses that ran 24 hours a day. And among the blue collar workforce were many undocumented workers that were paid under the table and lived off the grid. Part of my aunt's coursework for her degree was going into the local district and trying to help illegal immigrant families get resources for the kids. Stuff like free lunches, prenatal care if the moms were pregnant. Mostly, the work was depressing. The families wanted the resources, but they didn't want to bring any attention to their undocumented status. It was just a disaster. Uncle Jack lived across the street from a crappy apartment building that housed several of these families, and often groups of children would be playing outside. One day while visiting my aunt, he noticed this kid, a 5 or 6 year old girl, sitting alone on the apartment's crumbling balcony. After that, whenever she visited the girl would be there, but she was always gone during weekends. The girl would be there on the weekdays, but she would disappear on the weekends. There were a lot of people who lived in those units, so on the weekends there would be tons of kids of all ages running around, tearing crap up, generally being little jerks like kids do. They moved into the house in August, so it was blazing hot and the sun didn't set until almost 10 at night.
10 at night?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So the kids were always playing, running around.
Obviously.
Any given weekday, though, that kid would be sitting there all by herself, just caring over at them, well into the evening. My aunt said at first she thought it was sad that the kid didn't have anybody really looking after her. But then it started turning to fall and the days were getting shorter and colder. One night, my uncle was walking my aunt out to her car and she remarked to him that the little girl wasn't out there, a relief because it was getting so cold. But then a car turned down the street with its brights on, and when the headlights hit the balcony of that apartment building, the kid was still there. My aunt said she must have been wearing dark clothes because when the headlights passed over her, all they could really see was this very pale little face, the headlights washing away all of her features. She'd been there the entire time. They just hadn't seen her because it was so dark. That was turning point for my aunt. By now, she was into her internship with the district and was doing a lot of outreach. So one weekend afternoon, when it was still pretty nice outside, she and my uncle approached the families mingling outside. She asked about the little girl, but no one would talk to her. She said even the kids pretended not to be able to understand her. Winter came and still the little girl could be seen on the balcony, appearing like she wasn't wearing a coat. At this point, my aunt decided to stage an intervention to get the girl a jacket and maybe even enroll her in school. So she sees the kid one morning and heads across the street and up the stairs that lead to the second level. But by the time she gets there, the kid is gone. My aunt didn't hear any footsteps, she didn't hear any doors closing, nothing. My aunt figures it's the same thing from before, they are just scared of an outsider. But now she is more determined than ever because this kid really needs some resources. That week it snowed. So when the weekend comes, a bunch of the little jackals that were living across the street were outside stockpiling snowballs to throw at each other. My aunt had learned from the last time, so this time she doesn't take my uncle. But she does take candy and a bunch of silver dollars. The aunt is quite smart. The older kids avoid her like the plague. But a couple of the little ones come over and my aunt starts asking about the little girl. The kids are way more interested in the candy and silver dollars than the questions, and most of them refuse to answer until one of them finally says, Venka. The name of the child, my aunt presumes. She'd never heard of a name like that, but gives the little kids some candy and money anyway, which eventually entices the older kids over to start talking to her. Until she asks about Venka. Then the older kids completely climbed up, gathered up all the little ones, and in like 30 seconds, everyone was gone. One winter evening, when it was hella dark, my aunt saw the kid. By now, it was absolutely freezing out. There had been an ice storm the night before, and the kid was still out there. Flipping out, my aunt headed over, fully intending to get the kid and call the cops, because it wasn't just neglect at this point, it was abuse. When she finally made it up the apartment building's icy stairs, the kid was once again gone, which finally got my aunt to freak out, because there was no way a kid could have moved that fast on icy concrete, and she knows that none of the doors to any apartments were open. Still, she pulled it together and decided to walk the length of the balcony just to make sure the kid wasn't there. Reaching the midway point where this kid was always sitting, she saw deep in the ice these, she didn't know what to call them. They weren't footprints because they weren't shaped like feet, not even little feet. And there weren't any just on the top of the ice. They were all the way through it down to bare concrete. It was like the kid had been standing there during the ice storm the previous night, and the ice had built up around her feet. Terrified, my aunt tore us off the balcony and down the stairs. Managing to trip and take a spectacular chunk out of her shin in the way. Oh my god, she got hurt. She still has the scar today. After making it to my uncle's house and seeing what happened, he and two of his roommates headed over to check it out while she scared back and had someone patch up her leg. After about 10 minutes, the guys came back and told her that, yeah, they saw the footprints, though none of them could come up with any kind of explanation, and they tried to play it off. Working out all these different scenarios that seem plausible, like maybe there had been some empty cups or something sitting there and the kid kicked them off the ledge and that made the weird footprints. They convinced her that if they went over and looked in the morning, they'd probably find some cups on the ground. And then they said maybe my aunt hadn't seen the kid at all.
What?
At this point, they all seen the kid at least once. She was always over there. But they pointed out that they all got so used to seeing her that my aunt probably just saw a shadow and took for granted that it was the kid. Which didn't make any sense if they really thought the kid had kicked over some cubs, but whatever. Like, they're saying that there's no kid, and then they're saying that the kid kicked the cubs. Anyways. After winter finals, my uncle and his roommates decided to throw a giant kegger before everyone headed home for Christmas. It was the first time my aunt had been back to the house since all of the stuff on the balcony happened. But everything now seemed fine. The little girl is nowhere to be seen. The party ends up being low-key with only my uncle, his roommates, their girlfriends, and one roommate's sister, Marisol, in attendance. The night wore on and another ice storm began outside, causing the power to go out and the roommates to light a fire in the fireplace. They were all fairly trashed at this point, and one of the roommates brought up the weird footprints, something they'd yet to speak of out loud. Finally, around the fire, my uncle and two of his roommates admitted that it was creepy. I know it's not possible, but it looked like, began one of the guys, a goat hoof or a pig hoof. Failed in the other roommate, leaving my uncle to remark, yeah, like something was hanging there with cloven feet. The entire energy in the room, according to my aunt, was still uneasy when the roommate who said it looked like goat roof turned asked, what's the girl's name again? Velma? Venka, my aunt corrected. My aunt says you could have heard a pin drop at this point. But eventually, someone changed the subject and everyone continued to drink and goof around. At some point, however, my aunt went into the kitchen and followed by Marisol, the roommate's sister, alone in the kitchen. Marisol, a weird expression on her face, asked, did you say the girl's name was Venka? And my aunt nodded, telling her that was what the kids, the regular kids across the street, told her. Marisol nodded and didn't say anything for a while. But when my aunt turned to leave, Marisol put a hand on her arm and said, it wasn't Venka, it was Venga. It's slang. It means come here in Spanish. And that's when Marisol told my aunt the story. It was the first year the district and the college cracked the internship my aunt was participating in, and Marisol participating in the program was stuck literally going door to door trying to find the families with kids that needed to be enrolled in school. She got a hell of a lot farther than my aunt ever got because she spoke fluent Spanish. That makes sense. Yep. The family still didn't like her nosing around, but they would at least speak to her. Marisol says she went into another crappy apartment building, not across the street from my uncle's rental, but close. While there, she saw all of these kids, including a little girl dressed in dark clothes, who appeared to be by herself. So Marisol talked to the more friendly families and their kids, convincing them that they can qualify for services and going to school is really a good thing to be doing. Getting up to go, she asked about the girl she saw outside. Upon mentioning her, an older woman, probably a grandmother or great-grandmother, crossed herself and shook her head. She told Marisol that what she saw wasn't a little girl. It was a bad spirit. and Marisol should forget she ever saw her. At the time, she figured that maybe the kid was illegal or probably stolen or sold to another family. But then when she tried to really think back to the girl's features, nothing came to mind. It was sort of blank. Just a general impression of a girl in dark clothes. Over the weeks and months, Marisol started to eavesdrop, and more she would hear about this Venga girl. Apparently, she was called that because she would whisper Venga and try to lead people off into the woods. Oh my gosh. Marisol wasn't clear on what supposedly happened to anyone who dared to follow her, and according to the conversations she overheard, all of the kids knew better than to go with her, or else they'd be beaten within an inch of their lives by a granny armed with a wooden spoon. She then swore that she would catch glimpses of this kid in different places around town. Oh my god.
Venga.
By this point in the story, my aunt was super drunk and totally freaked out. Getting away from Marisol as quickly as she could, she informed my uncle that he needed to take her back to the dorm. Heading away from the apartment and by this wooded area, my uncle, either because of the ice storm or because he was tanked, ended up hitting the curb hard enough that it blew out a tire. Oh my gosh. They are stuck in the middle of the night. I can't. It being the middle of the night and freezing, he left my aunt in the car and got out alone to change the tire by the lack of a flare, the only light source he had. In the car, my aunt was terrified. The red light of the flare was bouncing off the ice and flashing everywhere, and there in the woods about 20 feet away is the girl. The flare was bright enough for my aunt to get a good look at her face, except there wasn't one. The face was perfectly pale and featureless. No eyes, no nose, no mouth. It was just completely smooth. Just like the Bly Manor thing. Yeah, I think something like that. Yeah. Even over the sound of the heater and the radio, my aunt says she could hear the girl whispering Venga to her, and she could hear her crooking a finger toward her. This was the first time my aunt saw the girl's hands. They are bleeding with long, cracked fingernails, and her feet weren't feet, they were like hooves. That explains the footprints. At this point, my uncle climbed back into the car, and my aunt, pointing him to the girl, finds that she was gone. The next morning, as soon as the sun was up, they packed up and drove all the way home for the holidays. After that, my aunt refused to go back to the house and never saw the girl again.
Wow!
It is such a long story, but I like it. Oh my gosh, Venga. Oh, so scary. Imagine just, haunted by this girl. Oh, she's so scary. I cannot.
Congratulations. Congratulations isn't always the right word. As I got out of the car, my pulse quickened. My palms started sweating. Tears formed in my eyes. I just got back from the doctor. He confirmed it. Pregnant. And it wasn't my husband's. I walked to the door, hands shaking, fumbling for keys. I let myself in. I heard the whistle from the kitchen. As I walked in, I saw my daughter, Carol, coloring at the dining room table, looking nervous. My husband, Peter, seemed to be washing dishes by hands. I watched as a plate was lifted, wiped, and put down. "Hey, sweetie," I heard Peter say as another plate was set down. How was your day?
Not good.
Carol, can you go upstairs, please? I asked Carol to go upstairs. Carol gave me a brief nod and bolted out of the room. Is something wrong? Asked Peter, concern in his voice. When I was sure Carol was out of earshot, I turned to Peter's voice. I am pregnant. But that isn't possible, I heard Peter say, confused. Wait, unless... Those last words were spoken in anger, and I felt a hand close around my throat and slam me against the wall. You cheated on me? No, I cried. I never cheated. I was always faithful to you. Then how? I could feel my feet lifting off the ground as I was forced up against the wall. I fulfilled my vows, till death do us apart. I cried, I felt a tremble, then heard a sob. I dropped to the ground, curling into a ball and crying. I heard one more sob, nothing. I felt an emptiness around me. I think Peter finally moved on.
God, is Peter dead?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So this comment is, oh, the husband was dead and the wife had a boyfriend or something. That's how she got pregnant. Peter had to move on and accept the fact that he's dead and can't be there anymore because his wife has moved on and it's time that he should go. Oh my gosh. Oh. Scary, man. Scary. 11 stories like these, like, you cannot predict what's going to happen until the very last sentence.
Yes.
So we are at the end of this episode. Congratulations if you have made it this far. If you have, you are the real MVPs and we love you so much.
Yep.
And yeah, it's gag joke time. It's that time again. Anu, hit us with it.
What do you get when you cross a vampire with a snowman?
I'm probably never going to guess it, so...
Frostbite.
Yeah.
Do we have another?
Yep. How does a penguin build a house?
Huh? What is it?
He glues it together.
That is so dumb. Anyways, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
For listening. And yeah, I hope that you're enjoying these episodes. We will see you in the next one with a new story from this book, Ghosts of the Silent Hills. Again, if you haven't listened to the last 4 episodes, please do listen, rate, review the podcast. And yeah, to follow us on our Instagram, what's our handle?
CreepyTales at 69.69.
And if you happen to have a ghost story, email us. What is our email again?
CreepyTales69@gmail.com.
Yes, I think that's correct. You can also send us on our Instagram. But yeah. Thank you so much for listening.
You.
I was going to say watching. Soon coming on YouTube if we can. Anyways. Bye guys.
Bye.
Bye guys.